you're listening to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. In our first story, water agencies, tribes, and conservation groups defend two-basin solution amid federal meetings on Potter Valley Project by Native News Online staff. A coalition of water agencies, counties, tribes, and conservation organizations behind the two-basin solution is raising concerns over recent reports that Agricultural Secretary Brooke Rollins convened a meeting in Washington, D.C. with PG&E's Chief Executive Interior Secretary Doug Burgum and the Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District regarding the future of the Potter Valley Project on the Eel River. The coalition says the reported federal-level discussions risk undermining a locally negotiated agreement that has been years in the making and is designed to balance water supply reliability with long-term river restoration. The coalition noted that the partnership includes the Round Valley Indian Tribes, a federally recognized confederation of Native American tribes with deep ancestral ties to the Eel River, water agencies serving roughly 600,000 people in the Russian River Basin, county governments, and conservation organizations that have worked for decades on fisheries restoration. Restoring the eel is about healing our river and our community, and it was important to us to come to an agreement that supported our neighboring communities as well, Joseph Parker, president of the Round Valley Indian Tribes, said. That is why we spent years at the table with our partners building the two-basin solution, because we believe communities in both watersheds deserve a sustainable future. We are committed to that vision, and we will see it through. The two-basin solution is the result of extensive collaboration among the Round Valley Indian Tribes, Sonoma Water, Humboldt County, the Mendocino County Inland Water and Power Commission, California Trout, Trout Unlimited, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. The agreement envisions PG&E's removal of its aging and uneconomic Eel River dams, restoration of the Eel River, and the construction of replacement infrastructure to maintain water supply stability in the Russian River Basin. We share the Secretary's concern with maintaining water security in the region, but the USDA's actions undermine our locally negotiated agreement that provides that security, said Mari Rodan, a member of the City of Ukiah City Council and an appointee to the Mendocino County Inland Water and Power Commission. It is incredibly important to us and our communities that control of resources stay in local hands. Charlie Schneider, Connectivity Program Manager for California Trout, emphasized that the agreement was built through local collaboration across both watersheds. The future of the Eel and Russian rivers should be decided by the people who live among them and depend on them, not brokered in Washington between political appointees and outside interests, Schneider said. The two-basin solution was built here by this community across both watersheds. It is the only plan that protects water supply stability for the Russian River while restoring the salmon runs that our Northern California communities depend on. The proposed plan includes creation of the new Eel Russian facility, NERF, which would allow continued diversions of water from the Eel River to the Russian River while supporting modernized infrastructure. The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC, which is overseeing PG&E's decommissioning process, has previously identified NERF as a viable replacement option in its scoping documents. We've been working diligently and have secured the funding to design the new Eel Russian facility to provide water supply reliability for Lake Mendocino for future storage in Potter Valley and for the Russian River watershed, said David Rabbit, board chair of the Eel Russian Project Authority. The two-basin solution is how water supply stability is maintained. Round Valley leaders also expressed concern about the involvement of the U.S. Department of the Interior in the Washington meeting, noting that there are no Bureau of Reclamation facilities in the region and pointing to the department's federal trust responsibility to tribes, including the Round Valley Indian tribes. The coalition's conservation partners also urged continued adherence to the existing decommissioning process and locally negotiated framework. The two-basin solution took years of detailed negotiations with tribes, irrigators, municipal users, and conservation groups to find a way to accommodate everyone's interests when the dams are gone, said Trout Unlimited's California director, Matt Clifford. It's frustrating that a Southern California water agency would try to override what is a very locally focused and successful effort. The partnership says it remains committed to advancing the two-basin solution and continuing coordination with PG&E to ensure the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission-led decommissioning process proceeds on schedule. Next up,
Two-Spirit Powwows, a space to celebrate Two-Spirit and Indigiqueer existence. Two-Spirit Powwows are forming out of community needs, and more continue to pop up each year. By Nika Bartu-Smith for ICT News. Two-Spirit Powwows have been a growing space in nearly the last 15 years all across Turtle Island for Two-Spirit and Indigiqueer community members and allies. From one of the longest-running dedicated Two-Spirit Powwows in San Francisco to the second annual in Montana, Two-Spirit Powwows have two common goals: to share resources and celebrate Indigiqueer joy. We want to honor and celebrate the fact that even through genocide, even through assimilation, Two-Spirit and Indigiqueer folks are alive and thriving and are contributing in endless ways to their own families, to their own communities, and to the world, said Angel Fabian, executive director of the Bay Area American Indian Two-Spirit. Fabian is Zapotec and Chicanx. As the Trump administration has brought with it a wave of attacks on the rights of 2SLGBTQ+ people, especially trans rights, the importance of Two-Spirit powwows, societies, and spaces are essential and continue to grow. We're not going to go away. We're not going to allow you to erase us and erase our culture, despite what the federal government and state legislatures continue to try to do, said David Herrera Mestizo and adopted Blackfeet. Herrera is the co-founder and executive director of the Montana Two-Spirit Society. Here's a quick glance at a few Two-Spirit powwows that take place across the country. In the Bay, started out of need. In 2012, the Bay Area American Indian Two-Spirits hosted one of the first dedicated Two-Spirit powwows open to the public and across the world. Now the powwow draws attendees from all across Turtle Island and beyond, averaging 4,000 to 5,000 people annually. It started out of need 15 years ago, Fabian said. There was, unfortunately, at that time, still a lot of refusal, and unfortunately, a lot of folks were turned away from powwows, among other spaces, because they didn't fit the gender norms, and because they wanted to present themselves in their authentic way. And so out of that great need to be in community, the BAAITS powwow was created. While the annual powwow was created as a response to the community need for Two-Spirit spaces, the organization has existed since 1999. It was formed by organizers of the 12th International Two-Spirit Gathering that was held in the Bay Area on Labor Day 1999, and members of the Gay American Indians founded in 1975. Founded in prayer, the organization serves the community through creating space for advocacy, wellness, and supporting the spiritual, cultural, and artistic endeavors of Two-Spirit and Indigiqueer people, according to Fabian. Today, the powwow is still one of the largest gatherings of Two-Spirit people and allies across the world. Fabian said the powwow is preceded by a week of activities, including a youth gathering and a welcome potluck dinner with a drum contest. Black Hills Two-Spirit Powwow, so we have a place to go. Early June, Uniting Resilience is hosting its fourth annual Black Hills Two-Spirit powwow in Rapid City, South Dakota. At the first powwow the organization held in 2023, more than 150 people registered at the door. It has continued to grow since then, between 300 and 400 attendees last year. As in the Bay Area in South Dakota, the powwow started out of a community need. Youth and adults alike beginning to ask Monique Muffy Musso and her wife Philippa De Leon Musso, co-founders of Uniting Resilience, to host a Two-Spirit powwow. "Why don't you put on a powwow so we can have a safe place to go? We don't have anywhere. We can't go to ceremonies and we can't go to sweat lodges. We can't even go to powwows," Musso recalled being told by community members who described being called homophobic slurs in some of those spaces. The annual Black Hills Two-Spirit Powwow is just one of the latest endeavors for Uniting Resilience, a nonprofit founded in 2021 by Musso and De Leon Musso, both citizens of the Ogallala Sioux tribe. "This organization got started because of our experiences," said Musso, describing the extreme racism and prejudice that she and her wife faced as a same-sex couple in South Dakota. "I would just like to say it was really hard for us to create this space because South Dakota is a red state. When we started doing this work, we made a lot of changes here in Rapid City. It can still be hostile, but not as bad as when we first moved here." Missoula Pride Two-Spirit Powwow. "We've existed since the beginning." As the Montana Two-Spirit Society gears up for its 30th annual Montana Two-Spirit Gathering this coming August, one of the longest-running Two-Spirit gatherings across Turtle Island, the organization is preparing for its second annual Two-Spirit powwow that will take place mid-June. Though there is a mini powwow at the annual gathering, youth from the Montana Two-Spirit Society's youth group requested a bigger powwow that is open to the public. Hearing from the youth group, the Montana Two-Spirit Society talked with Missoula Pride, and the first annual powwow took place last June to kick off Missoula Pride weekend. "There was a lot of youth, and so to see the little ones dancing was so nice," said Stephen Barrios, co-founder and board chair of the Montana Two-Spirit Society. Barrios is Pikuni Blackfeet Nation. The Montana Two-Spirit Society aims to both provide a space for Two-Spirit and Indigenous queer community members while also providing education to the general public with the powwow, the annual gathering, and the year-around programming. "Part of our mission is to educate around what it means to be Two-Spirit and about Two-Spirit culture and how our culture was almost eradicated as a result of colonization," said Herrera. "But thankfully, we've existed since the very beginning. We've always been here."
You're listening to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Up next, roasted dandelion root tea, the natural caffeine-free diuretic growing in your backyard, by Sean Griswold for Native News Online. At a recent prenatal appointment, the nutritionist assigned to help my wife with her pregnancy ran into our room with an enthusiastic question: "Did you make the dandelion root tea?" We had a quick reply because just that morning, we had made roasted dandelion root tea with a simple recipe and drank 2 cups. The nutritionist thanked us for following through with her recommendation and said to keep drinking from the bag of dried dandelion root that she got from a local farm source. She recommended it to help with swelling, digestion, and blood sugar. The dried and roasted dandelion root tea was given to us during the third trimester and came under the recommendation from a certified nutritionist and herbalist. Dandelion root acts as a natural diuretic that can ease bloating and help with some of the water weight that happens from a growing baby. Taken in moderation and under guidance from a trusted professional, the tea is a simple, natural remedy that includes added benefits that can also help release lower back pain and can offer nutrients like iron or potassium. It may not work for everyone, so please consult your provider with any questions. For my wife, it was a vital addition to her prenatal care, not only for the health benefits, but also because it is a caffeine-free option that allowed her to enjoy a cup of warm tea for comfort necessary in the later stages of pregnancy. We did not harvest or forage the dandelion ourselves. Instead, the nutritionist received it from a local farm that does not use pesticides or other harmful chemicals on or around natural wildlife. If you get your hands on some or develop a clean alternative in your yard, the tea is helpful for anyone not pregnant too. Both the leaf and root carry vitamins A and C that can serve as a liver remedy. Anyone currently prescribed diuretics should use caution before consuming the tea. According to the North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems, dandelions are herbaceous perennial plants with a rosette of dark green leaves that grow up to 12 feet long and one or more hollow flowering stalks that grow up to 15 inches long. Leaf margins consist of large teeth. The bright yellow inflorescence is common in disturbed areas, such as lawns and roadside ditches. Leaves are best in spring, flowers and stems in summer, and roots in fall. With dried root in hand, mix between 2 to 4 tablespoons in a tea strainer or infuser and add to hot water. Don't use boiling water because it may burn the root and make the taste more bitter. To our shock, the dandelion root tea was actually less bitter, sweet even, than other root teas, and we found ourselves drinking it without sugar or cream. Of course, adding any additional flavor can provide new and exciting flavors, but remember, you are working with a root that has a neutral flavor. Dandelion root tea makes 4 servings. 2 to 4 tablespoons of dried, roasted, and ground dandelion root. 4 cups of water. Bring the water to a boil and let sit until warm. Add the tea to the water with a strainer or infuser and let sit for 5 minutes. Add cream or sugar to taste and can also be enjoyed plain. In our next story, Building Generations of Native Ballet Dancers. One family has 3 generations of men with artistic talents. By Shirley Sneave for ICT News, Indian Country Today. Father's Day brings joy to a Chickasaw family. Jared M.P. Chachaha Tate beams with pride when he talks about his son, Hiloha Tate, and the 12-year-old artist's accomplishments. This summer, he's studying at the Joffrey Ballet, Tulsa Ballet, University of Oklahoma, and the Florida Ballet School. The young dancer received lessons by the infamous Diné dancer, Jock Soto, while they were both in New York. Soto was a principal dancer, the highest-ranking dancer in a ballet company with the New York City Ballet. He retired in 2005. This was the first time these 2 generations of Native American ballet dancers met in person, after years of Zoom, phone calls, and following each other through social media. Last summer, Hiloha was awarded the first Jock Soto Scholarship, which is dedicated to supporting the cost of dance, training, and helping young dancers continue to pursue their dreams. To know that he is a Native American and that I am also, I've been around for 61 years. I was just so happy to hear that another Native became a ballet dancer, Soto said. It's just very, very rare. Hiloha is the first young Native male dancer that Soto has met through his long and storied career. Soto was in New York City teaching at the New York Community Ballet when he saw Hiloha rehearse. I was watching my choreography being done by the 2 dancers I'm working with, and of course my eye just went right to him, Soto said. He worked with Hiloha during every break. I went over to the bar and I started correcting him and telling him he had to do this and fix this and do this and hold his arm there, and he was very receptive, and I was very, very happy to see that, Soto said. Music and dance are family traditions. Hiloha's grandfather was an attorney and a classically trained pianist and baritone. His mother was a professional choreographer and dancer. A profile of the father-son duo was featured on Chickasaw TV last September. For Father's Day, the ICT newscast will feature that piece. Hiloha, whose name means thunder in the Chickasaw language, has been dancing for 7 years. He's the only male his age dancing with the Oklahoma City Ballet. While ballet is his career goal, he excels in music, playing the French horn, cello, piano, and singing. In fact, he's joined his father, Jared, on stage many times. Iloha has all the qualities of being a dancer. He's got beautiful feet, nice legs for a 12-year-old, Soto said. I hope that he keeps it up. Up next, Navajo Nation Economic Summit draws crowd to Twin Arrows for talks on business, housing, and infrastructure by Doreen Holchi for Navajo Hopi Observer. Flagstaff, before the sessions began each morning, attendees of the 8th Annual Navajo Nation Economic Summit laced up their shoes and headed outside. The daily fun run and walk drew participants onto the resort grounds just after dawn. Cyrus Curley of Gallup, New Mexico, was among them on Wednesday, though the 2.77-mile route was a comfortable stretch for the former U.S. Marine Corps veteran, who said he runs about 7 miles every morning. Curley, a weights and measures inspector for the Navajo Nation's Business Regulatory Department, was at the summit as a volunteer. Everybody's taught, get up before the sun, do your prayers, and then just go be active all day, he said. As long as you're active all day, you'll stay active. His message for anyone thinking about attending the summit in the future was just as direct. This is a big event, Curley said. Anyone with a small business should come here. Take some classes, get registered. It's growing, so there's plenty of room. Come out. The 8th Annual Navajo Nation Economic Summit, held earlier in June at the Twin Arrows Navajo Casino Resort, brought together entrepreneurs, tribal leaders, investors, job seekers, and community organizers from across the Southwest under the theme of Our Resources, Our Responsibility. The event was organized by the Navajo Nation Division of Economic Development and drew vendors, exhibitors, and speakers across 5 tracks: innovation, entrepreneurship, and small business, finance, energy, and tourism. Twin Arrows provided the backdrop and the hospitality throughout, with breakfast and lunches served each day. The resort, located approximately 20 miles east of Flagstaff off Interstate 40, has become the summit's established home in recent years. The exhibitor floor reflected the current focus of programs designed to help Navajo economy. The Office of the Navajo Tax Commission staffed a booth under its By Navajo banner. Red House Law, a 100% Navajo woman-owned law firm, was on hand to discuss legal services. The Navajo Small Business Credit Initiative and Change Labs, whose tagline reads, Creating Future Native Change Makers, connected with entrepreneurs looking for coaching, funding, and resources. The Navajo Nation Business Regulatory Department also had a presence on the floor. Chris Billy, Executive Director of the Tribal Home Ownership Coalition of the Southwest, delivered one of the summit's most pointed sessions, arguing that unrealized home equity is quietly draining generational wealth from Navajo families. On the reservation, we were being taught how to survive, Billy said. We weren't being taught how to thrive. The BIA said you could have this land, but there's no value in it. You can't buy, you can't sell, you can't trade. The coalition recently helped the Tso family of Lichi complete what it describes as the first MLS-listed appraised home sale within a Navajo Housing Authority Master Lease Subdivision, a 2-year effort across tribal, state, and federal agencies. The home appraised at $155,000 equity the family had built over decades but could not access without a formal sale process. This is life-changing money going unrealized, Billy said. We need to protect homeowners. The Navajo Nation estimates more than 30,000 homes need to be built to meet current demand. The coalition, funded through Wells Fargo's Invest Native Initiative, provides home buyer education, policy advocacy, and research across Arizona and New Mexico. More information is available at tribalhomesw.org. Avanza Cleantech, a Colorado-based company, was among the floor exhibitors presenting solutions to septic challenges facing tribal communities. Representatives Andrew Healy, Tyson Manross, and Joseph Cerna staffed a table to discuss their AquaZar system, a modular, chemical-free wastewater treatment unit built for remote communities without public sewer access. The system arrives in shipping containers, installs in months, runs on solar power, and includes real-time remote monitoring operable by existing staff. The company says it meets NSF and EPA discharge standards, carries a lifespan of more than 30 years, and has been installed across more than 55 countries. For tribal nations, AquaZar navigates Indian Health Service and EPA grant funding that can cover up to 100% of eligible project costs. The summit's arts market filled the Twin Arrows Rotunda, the resort's main thoroughfare, through the final day, where Navajo artists and makers displayed traditional skirts, beadwork, graphic apparel, and original artwork. The event was hosted by Navajo Gaming, which operates Twin Arrows Navajo Casino Resort. The resort's conference facilities, meals, and accommodations served the three-day summit well. You've been listening to Native Sun on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm your volunteer reader, Kim Chupa Cornell. Remember, if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org/broadcast info and audio/on demand. Music is Land Back by Hallucination. Please join us for an upcoming episode.